KALW.
I was just so fascinated with this idea of using choirs to promote health and well-being among older adults.
A researcher at UCSF thinks community choirs can be more than just a fun activity.
I'm 86 now. The choir is the highlight of my week.
Seniors who sing. Then another possible solution for healing using sound itself.
I like to say that we talk a lot, but we don't always use our voice.
And we remember the significance of the late Willie Mays.
Before the 1963 Rumford Fair Housing Act was passed in California, Willie had contributed mightily to breaking the housing discrimination issue in San Francisco.
We bid the Giants greet a final farewell. I'm Sunny Khalid in for Hana Baba, and this is Cross Currents. 12 years ago, a UCSF researcher teamed up with the city and nonprofit officials to launch a novel experiment meant to answer one question. Can singing in a choir provide real health benefits for older adults? Today, a thriving network of neighborhood choirs continues to discover the answer. Reporter Cheryl Kaskowitz has more.
To the morning light.
In the large social hall of the Most Holy Redeemer Catholic Church in San Francisco's Castro District, a group of singers sit with their choir folders open in rows of chairs around the grand piano. There aren't very many of them here today, just two sopranos, about three altos, four tenors, and two basses. A handful of singers also join on Zoom through a phone perched on the piano.
One, two, three, and.
To the morning light.
This isn't the church choir, though. It's the Castro Neighborhood Choir for older adults and adults with disabilities. All of the members are over 60, and they rehearse here, next to the Castro Senior Center, every Thursday afternoon. Today, their conductor, Robin Estrada, has invited the members of another neighborhood choir she leads to join them here. This one serves the Filipino community at the Bayanihan Equity Center, south of Market. And the two choirs are preparing to perform together this coming weekend.
Together, one, and go.
Community choruses are nothing new, but these groups are part of a network of neighborhood choirs that hatched out of a scientific experiment more than 12 years ago. Chris Tweedy was one of the original members of the Castro Choir.
UCSF Med Center had a call in the newspaper, San Francisco Chronicle, for singers or people who haven't been singing much or who would like to start singing. Yes, that was me.
She says she wasn't daunted by the fact that joining this choir was a bit unusual, involving a kind of physical exam that you might expect to do in a doctor's office.
I joined the study and it was so much fun. We had to do physical demonstrations of how many times we could sit down and stand up really fast, and standing on one leg. And we did all kinds of stuff. We were supposed to remember certain words, and I failed at that.
The study was created by a team of researchers, city health officials, and community arts leaders who all wanted to know, could a choir have scientifically proven health benefits for older adults?
Hi, I'm here to see Julian Johnson.
Today, I've come to one of the shiny new UCSF buildings in Mission Bay to hear how it all started.
So my name is Julian Johnson, and I'm a professor at the University of California, San Francisco, in the Institute for Health and Aging. And I'm by training a cognitive neuroscientist, but I also did my undergraduate degree in music. So that kind of sets the stage for why I'm interested in music and brain and then ultimately aging.
In 2011, she received a Fulbright Fellowship to study aging in a country with a deep appreciation for community music. Finland.
And I spent 6 months hanging out with different choirs.
We're listening to a recording she made of one of these choirs called Kanal Kuoro.
And what was remarkable in the city called Jyväskylä, Finland, is they had 50 choirs, community choirs. That's 50. 50 choirs in the community of 125,000 people. And it was just amazing because they also had 6 choirs that were dedicated to older adults.
Her study of over 100 older adults singing in these Finnish community choirs found that people who said the choirs were beneficial also had a higher quality of life.
So I came back all energized to the United States. And mainly because I was just so fascinated with this idea of using choirs to promote health and well-being among older adults. And serendipitously, at that same time, the National Institute on Aging came out with a call for grants that were asking for novel ways to promote health and well-being in the community. So to keep older adults engaged and active in the community. And I thought, wow, these could be the choirs, and we could do a larger study.
Julien connected with the Community Music Center, or CMC, which already ran 2 community choirs for older adults here in San Francisco. She got the grant and added the city's Department of Aging and Adult Services to the partnership, now called the Community of Voices Research Study. The program expanded from those 2 community choirs to 12 neighborhood choirs at senior centers across the city. They were much more than simple recreation. They were laboratories for a 3-year randomized trial about the potential health benefits of singing in a choir.
So we hypothesized that there would be improvements in the cognitive domain, physical domain, and emotional domain.
In 2018, after nearly 6 years, they released their findings. They didn't see any significant changes in the cognitive tests of memory and executive function, or in physical tests of things like walking speed and their ability to sit and stand quickly. But here's what they did find.
Older adults who sang in the choir had significantly reduced feelings of loneliness and also significantly increased what we call interest in life. So this is kind of the pep that you feel in the morning that says, you know, get out of bed and you want to go somewhere and do something so you feel you have some meaning.
This finding was important enough that even after the UCSF study ended, the city has continued to fund the program, and the number of choirs has expanded to 15. I'm able to see many of the neighborhood choirs in action today at CMC's annual field day at its Mission District headquarters. It's a marathon of short performances put on as a fundraiser, and several of the choirs take the stage throughout the afternoon. Singers find places to sit on the sunny courtyard as they wait for their turn to go on.
Oh, I'm 86 now, and the choir is the highlight of my week.
That's Isabel Heredia. She's a longtime member of CMC's original senior choir at the Mission Neighborhood Center, and she also sings with the choir at the Centro Latino.
And so it's a joy for me, really. I live alone, and this is a lifesaver.
Yeah.
Because there is no incentive, really, for people who are older and frail to get up in the morning. And if you have a date, you have to go, and you enjoy the company of the people you meet there. You get up, get dressed, and go out. And that is a big plus for seniors.
This issue of social isolation has gotten more attention recently. And it's not just an issue for older adults.
It's because we've realized that loneliness is more than just a bad feeling. It has real consequences for our mental and physical health. It increases.
In 2023, U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy issued an advisory declaring an epidemic of loneliness and isolation.
So however you look at it, loneliness and isolation are public health concerns that we have to prioritize.
It remains to be seen if community choirs will be widely embraced as a public health solution to this epidemic. But it makes sense to Julien Johnson.
If somebody shared with me they're lonely, I might say, well, why don't you join a choir?
The hope is that doctors and nurses could consider group singing as a kind of prescription against loneliness and isolation. at least encouraging people to try it out. In San Francisco, I'm Cheryl Kaskowitz for CrossCurrents.
Cheryl is a recent graduate of our Audio Academy. You can find the rest of her stories at kalw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Sunil Khalid in for Hannah Baba. As we just heard, communal singing can provide a sense of community and serve as a source of healing from the epidemic of loneliness. But can sound itself work as a tool for wellness? Oakland resident Luna Mirren participated in something called Sound Healing. For about an hour, she listened to the sounds of singing bowls and gongs.
Especially with the bowls, you can really feel the vibrations. You can feel this up and down like waves, and it feels as if these waves go through my body as well.
The session was put on by Eric Setnarski at his studio in Oakland. In this story, which aired in 2016, KALW's Truk Nguyen met with him to learn about the instruments he uses in his sound healing class.
My name is Eric Setnarski, and I'm a sound healer based in Oakland, California. In our modern world, we don't always have access to sounds that are pure, consistent. There's a lot of sirens, our electronics. BART, I always use as a great example of a sound that is not necessarily healing. So it creates kind of a low-level stress, so it puts us into fight or flight. Sound healing is many different things, and sound healing is music. That's a great example of how we use sound for healing. So we listen to music to be happy, we listen to music to be sad. Since we've been able to use voices and instruments, music has been a modality of sound healing. Then there are other types of sound healing, like frequencies and vibrations. So if you were to take a droplet of water and put it under a microscope and blast a frequency or vibration that's pure onto it, it would start to vibrate in a symmetrical pattern. So think of a snowflake. The bowl in front of me is a quartz crystal bowl, one of many types of instruments that can be used to either relax or can also be used to energize. This is an 18-inch gong, and it's made out of metal, and it's circular, and depending on where you hit it, it'll make different kinds of vibrations. So the gong can be used to relax, but can also be used to break up stuck energy or stuck patterns, that mental loop that's playing in our head. I think metal is definitely more activating as opposed to the quartz crystal, which is more grounding. But all the tools can be used for everything depending on how you play them, just like any instrument. So, you know, you can use an electric guitar to make someone very calm, or you can make them activated. So the voice actually is the original sound healer for humans, and it can be used in many different ways. It can be used to express emotions. It can be used to calm. You can actually tone into your body as well, too. So you can create vibrations by using your voice. So, for example, I'm going to tone into my chest right now. Now I'm going to tone into my stomach. Perhaps if your mother would sing to you, the voice being a very calming, you can actually do that to yourself. It's a very healing tool. I like to say that we talk a lot, but we don't always use our voice. We can use our voice as tools for change, for tools of love, of compassion. We can also use our voice as tools of damage, for tools to make people uneasy or stressed. What is your tone? What is your delivery? Maybe not what you're saying, but how you're saying it. We often say things that we're supposed to be saying. As a society, what is improper? What is the right way? We have our, you know, if we're working, we have our business language. But when you're using your voice, oh, you're actually expressing yourself deep down from your stomach through your whole body. And your voice is a pure expression of who you are.
That was Eric Sednarski at his studio in 2016. Since the story first aired, Eric has moved his sound healing practice to Portugal. We will have links to other similar workshops at KALW.org and click on Cross Currents for details. This is Cross Currents. I'm Suni Khaled in for Hana Baba. A public memorial is being held today for the late Willie Mays at Oracle Park. It's expected that thousands of fans will bid the Giants great a final farewell. Much has been written and said about the on-field exploits of Mays, regarded by many as the greatest all-around baseball player ever. Many remember him for his cheerful and gracious demeanor after he retired from the game a half century ago. But Willie Mays was also an important social figure during an era of tremendous social turbulence in San Francisco after the Giants moved here from New York in 1957. Dr. Harry Edwards is a professor emeritus at UC Berkeley, where he taught sociology, but he is perhaps best known for organizing the Olympic Project for Human Rights, which led to the famous Black Power protest by U.S. sprinters John Carlos and Tommy Smith. I recently spoke to Edwards about the historical significance of Willie Mays at a pivotal time in San Francisco's racial and social evolution.
Baseball was the number one sport in the country at the time. Also, we were in the throes of a burgeoning civil rights movement launched by Dr. King and the Montgomery bus boycott effort. And in point of fact, in 1957, Howard University gave both Dr. King and Jackie Robinson honorary doctorates in the same program as a consequence of their social justice efforts. And this was like 7 years before Dr. King received the Nobel Peace Prize. So people expected the number one baseball player heir apparent, Willie Mays, to step into that mix. Baseball was the number one sport. He was the number one Black baseball player. On top of that, there were athletes all around him who were picking up that mantle. You had Elgin Baylor, who in 1959 sat out a game in Charlotte, West Virginia, when the hotel where the Lakers were staying would not allow him to eat in the cafeteria. And so he sat on the end of the bench in a street clothes. So all of that pressure was on Willie Mays. People in the Black community expected Willie to step up with those other athletes in the footsteps of Jackie Robinson and so forth. But that wasn't Willie Mays. He's made it very, very clear. Even when they approached him about the fact that he had been discriminated in terms of renting a house in a white neighborhood, when the NAACP approached him about that, because it wasn't Willie's idea to fight that discrimination. It was the NAACP and some civil rights interests around the San Francisco area who saw an opportunity to deal with the housing segregation and the anti-Black covenants in real estate agreements where housing was sold. They saw an opportunity to fight that. And Willie's first response was, hey, I fight for my people by going out and being the best baseball player I could be. They say, yeah, but this is unique. You've got a chance to break the housing discrimination, covenants, and so forth in San Francisco. And ultimately, Willie agreed to it. And with the NAACP and a whole community of civil rights people around him, he won that right to live in that house, in that neighborhood. He made a heck of a contribution in that regard. And he did make a significant contribution in terms of demonstrating the caliber of baseball player he was. As Dr. King taught us in 1956, we want to be judged not by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character, the caliber of our competence, and the magnitude of our contribution. Willie made all of those marks, and he made them at a very high level on the baseball field, between the lines. And he made it very, very clear. As far as he was concerned, they had made a lot of progress in baseball, which was not true. And he never realized the extent to which Black involvement in baseball was essentially a transactional deal. That's why today we have 6% African-Americans in Major League Baseball. In 1973, it was 21% African-Americans.
But he did speak out in 1966 when you had the riots in Bayview, Hunters Point, when a police officer shot and killed a young African-American teenager.
Yep.
In fact, it was the City Fathers. The Giants were playing the Braves in Atlanta about that. And he did not denounce the rioting. And they asked him to go on the air to make a statement. His statement that he made was very, very clear. He said, respect yourselves. But he did not denounce the disturbances or the people who were demonstrating against this act. That was a very tricky thing for him to do.
It was tricky, depending upon how willing he was to pay the cost of telling the truth. Anything having to do with kids, Willie was down with it. And when that young teenage kid got shot by a police officer, murdered under cover of the badge, Willie was serious about his commitment to kids. I mean, this is a guy who, when he was in New York, on the day of a game, somebody would come by his apartment and say, hey, can you come out and play some stickball with us? I got a game tonight, but I'm going to come out there and I'm going to hit a couple of balls with you. And he would go out in the street and play stickball with kids on game day. He was serious about his commitment to kids. So I was not surprised that he would speak out about that, not necessarily not denouncing the response to this persistent issue that African-Americans have had of murder under cover of the badge, but that he said anything at all, because that was not in Willie's nature to step outside of the lines and engage in conversation, dialogue, and discourse about issues that were on their face divisive. And so I thought too, like you, that he walked a very narrow but yet positive line relative to what was a certainly not justifiable, but most certainly understandable response from a community where a young person had been murdered under cover of the badge and nobody had been charged, nobody prosecuted, nobody tried, nobody sent to jail. So that was the pattern that Willie was responding to. That it doesn't make any difference how great a baseball player you are. They will cheer for you between the lines and then spit in your face when you cross a line in terms of the racist definitions and expectations of Black people in American society. And so Willie was pressed to deal with that. And many times when people came up to him with a statement which was toe a line in terms of that kind of issue, Many times you say, hey, I'm a baseball player. I'm just a baseball player. Ask me something about baseball. This is not a condemnation of Willie Mays. It's an effort to properly frame Willie Mays, because if you listen to all of the stuff that has come down over the airwaves and so forth, oh, how much we love Willie Mays. He's such a wonderful player. He's a great guy and so forth and so on. And hey, they felt that way about him. And he made sure that they continued to feel that way about him. The mainstream white America continued to feel that way about him. You've got to realize all of the pressures that were on him. So to expect him to stand up simply because he was the presumptive heir apparent to Jackie Robinson was unfair, especially under the circumstances and all of the pressures that he was moving through in that particular historical era.
Say hey, Willie, will you want out here?
That was Dr. Harry Edwards, UC Berkeley Professor Emeritus, on the social significance of the late Willie Mays in San Francisco.
I'm a wall that's standing high to say hello before he tries and grabs that line, driving his hand. As he descends from the grandstand, he throws a strike and nails a fist.
Today's team includes Michaela Sia, Christopher Alam, Hussein Khan, James Rollins, Gonady Joe Johnson, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adel, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Suni Khalid.